Welcome to the next edition of the Phoenix Rising podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the backbone of the firm, which is the administrative aspect of things that we do things. So here with me, I've got Jen Pizzon.
Hello.
Who you guys have seen before. Lucky you. We've got Amy Terran, who is new. And then we've got Meg Luton.
Hi.
Who I pronounced Luton for the longest time. And then after a year of working for the firm, she finally felt comfortable and told me that it's Luton. And so every time I say it like that. It's Meg Luton.
I didn't know that.
You at didn't know that?
At least you
learn something new every day. I really thought it was Luton. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dennis has it spelled with two T's on the new intern schedule. So I need to correct that.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Or not. But what we do here, and I'll tell you a little bit about how I operate, and then I'll bring Amy, Meg, and Jen into the fold because they do a lot of really important stuff behind the scenes. So for me, when you're building a business, usually what happens is you get somebody who is very excited about the prospect of opening a law firm or opening an HVAC company. But what happens is once they start getting into the grind and they have to worry about bringing in sales, converting the sales, dealing with employees from an HR standpoint, the legals, logistic, and then next thing you know, you've got an owner who is spending 80% of their time not on what they started the business for, right? So for me, in building this business, it was to better support the lawyers in hopes of it creating a better legal product, right? Because if the lawyers aren't focused on the hiring, if they're not focused on the marketing, if they're not focused on the sales, if they're not doing all of that, and they're focused solely on the clients, the goal was the byproduct of a higher legal service. And I'm happy to announce it worked. It worked. We are probably, if not the largest, one of the largest DWA defense firms in the country, right? Which is pretty amazing because we're here in Syracuse. We service all of New York except for downstate New York. We do a little work down there just because that culture is completely different down there. In with the way our processes work. So what I want to talk about is how we as a organization, as a law firm, has one, a CEO that's not a lawyer. And then we have eventually somebody that is in the process of becoming the chief operating officer in Jen, who is not a lawyer. Then we've got a billing AR clerk who is not a lawyer. And then we have a firm administrator and soon to be an impact officer who is not a lawyer. How is all that work in a law firm, right? And I think it's all very important to get a little more behind the insights of how we're able to do that. So let me start with Amy. You came from us from a company that that you had worked at in sales for how long?
Done sales for 6 years and worked in client services for another 5.5.
Gotcha. So 5.5 plus 6. So you worked there for 30 years.
Exactly.
Okay. That's great. Yeah. Talk to me about what that transition was, because I know that we had some very deep conversations when you started about pushing you and getting you to that next level, doing all that. So talk about your journey a little bit from where you started to where you're at now.
Yeah. So when I started, I think one of our first conversations was that you were going to push me every single day. We were not going to have easy days. They were going to be long and grueling, but the growth that would happened was going to be amazing. So after 2 years of doing that, I'm like, okay, I think I finally got it. And then you're like, all right, get ready because we're getting ready to change it up again. And so that's what we keep doing. And the growth that has happened has been amazing. If you were to tell me where I would be 4 years later after I started, I wouldn't believe you. The person who I was 4 years ago, I have no idea who that person is. And now I look at how far can I go?
Yeah. 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 It's funny you say that. And it's so weird that people are able to say this versus where I'm at now, right?
Yeah.
And yes, I see the transformation. But for me, one of my superpowers is I could see that, right? I can see that. So when I see that transformation, it's not that big of a transformation for me, right? So when people can see it within themselves, that's what's super powerful for me. I'm going to kick over to Jen. Jen, talk to me about the one thing that's been the most driver for your success personally and professionally since you joined the firm.
Since I've joined the firm, driver for success. I know we talk about, you know, you're so much beyond a parent, but I have a daughter.
Mm.
Like, it's kind of crazy because right now we are both, I'm 50, she's 28, but we're both growing and advancing in our careers. But I want her to see that you can do it. It's never too late. And I, not only for her, but other women.
Yeah.
Middle-aged women, especially. I mean, 15 years ago, somebody my age would have been written off. So that's a driver for me to, like, glass ceiling. I know that's like a cliche
term. A what?
Glass ceiling. Breaking
okay.
glass.
Yep, yep.
You know, it's a cliche term, but it's still a driver for me. Let me be an example to other women, particularly my daughter or women my age.
Yeah. I love that.
It's never too late.
What's the one tool that has helped you get to that?
Emotional intelligence.
That's the answer I wanted.
Yes. No, seriously, it was when we brought in our coach to work with us on that. Didn't know if I could say his name or not on here. So
his name's Michael Scrow.
Hi, Michael.
Love you, Michael. Yeah.
I took it seriously. And it's so simple, the techniques. But if you do it every day and you focus on it, your capacity at home, at work, my husband, like kind of like Amy, my husband's like, you are not the same person that you were before we did that. That tool has allowed me to drive and grow and be okay with it. If you get hard on me, I can deal with it now, whereas I probably would have been crying and sucking my thumb under my desk 4 years ago.
This is very true. That's very true. I saw her twice doing it. The crazy thing about somebody that is not extremely emotionally intelligent, because I don't want to say that you weren't emotionally intelligent. You most certainly were. To somebody that is naturally emotionally intelligent, right? Like we've got a couple employees, Justin Lang, who is naturally emotionally intelligent, right? But they don't understand and appreciate the work that's gone into it, right? Because it's natural for them, right? Mm-hmm.
They just think everybody should just get it.
Yeah, 100%. Yep. And you know, and then you talk about – so it, those individuals are also very, very difficult to work with because they don't understand the work that's behind the scenes that's going on for it. Meg.
Yes.
Meg, we had a one-on-one this week.
Yes.
And what was the end result of that?
You told me to – make a 5-year plan for myself so we can see where my trajectory is headed in my role or not, maybe. Who knows? So,
yeah. So I had the pleasure of meeting Megan's mother and father. and her mother told me that Meg is very smart, which I agreed with, and I know that. But she likes to fly down here on the radar, and I'm going to have that. I'm going to make you feel a really uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah. Good luck.
And by the way, it was not the words grueling and long hours never were said for the record.
Emotionally painful.
Yes. It will be emotionally painful from there. So, what I want to do right now is I want to talk about it's very difficult working with lawyers, right? What makes lawyers really great lawyers sometimes makes them really difficult sometimes to work with, right? And that doesn't mean they're bad people. It doesn't mean any of that thing. It's just their job and responsibility is to be laser focused, right? And they have a task to do, and they're data-driven. And when you talk about things about instinct, when you talk about things about culture, when you talk about things about emotional intelligence, they're things that you typically can't see, you can't hear them, you can't smell it, which makes it very difficult for them, right? So the one thing that's really important to me, as I've said this a few times now, is that it was really important to me to build a family, right? I grew up in foster homes and that, so I wanted to build family through networking, through business and all of that. So culture is super duper important to me, right? Being named one of the best companies to work for, winning that award, it's the pinnacle of why I exist and why I do the things that I do. But it's also very difficult too, right? Because we've got three major departments. We got legal admin, we got legal department, and then we got the admin, right? And the legal admin is like the paralegal level work, right? Which is all super duper important. Then you've got the legal work, which is really also super important. And then you got the administrative work, right? That's everything from sales, marketing, accounts receivable, all of that. All super duper easy, right? And what happens when you have all of those things together, it can create chaos, right? So the thing that I did with our what we call our playbook is I took the concept of sports, right? Because sports is the ultimate team aspect of it, right? And people get it, right? You can't win a championship without a quarterback. You can't win a championship without a good pitching. And people get that concept, right? So what we did is we broke it down into four seasons, right? We had the preseason, which is reviewing the things that we want to get accomplished in that given year. We outlined all of that, and we did it within each department, right? So that the department was pushing themselves forward, and therefore they weren't reliant on any other department, right? And then what we did is from there, then we had for the next 7-8 months, we had what's called the season. And those are the things that gets us to the point where we outline our KPIs and our goals, gives them update, make sure that we're pushing that forward. And then we have the third part of the season, which is the playoffs, which is the time in the year where you kind of take a look back and say, here's the driving forces that we need to complete by the end of the year. And then we have the postseason, right? And the postseason there at that point is a reflection period where we say, okay, here's where we were successful, here's where we were not successful. And then we start that process over again with the preseason, right? So that's a quick synopsis of there. Now, along the lines to create that synergy, we have locker room sessions, which are done on a weekly basis. We also have each of those departments have a captain. So therefore, there's a captain's meeting every 2 weeks where the captains get together and talk about any interdepartment conflict and issues and projects and all of that. And then every month there is an executive meeting where we have the captains and then we have the executives in there and we talk about any decisions that need to be made and we create that synergy that way, right? So the first thing I want to talk about is I want to talk about the locker room sessions. And I'll start with you, Meg. So talk to me about, because we always had meetings, mm-hmm. right? Talk to me what you like best about the transition to these locker room sessions.
So I enjoy the locker room sessions particularly because it's admin and the advocates who are the ones who really are interacting with clients, you know, at the front of the line. And it's interesting for me in the payments department to be able to speak with the advocates and get their input on, you know, different practices for the billing and also why maybe we're offering payment plans to people that I don't feel we should or vice versa. Yeah. And so it's interesting to see both insights that way.
Yeah. Jen, what's the legal admin locker room sessions? What's it do for you?
I get a firm understanding grip of what they are struggling with. What I can help them solve in that moment or what needs to be escalated on to the captain's meeting.
Got it.
I meet, we didn't talk about the huddles, but I do the huddles once a week with each of the either legal assistants or paralegals. And there's oftentimes we're in that meeting and I'll bring it to the locker room section.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, it's a nice recalibration once a week to really get a grip on what's going on.
And I'll give you an example of how that happened. So yes, I skip the weekly huddles. I have the leader of each department, not the captain, but the leader of each department meets with the individuals every week to do a couple different things. One, what's their cheese? What's their mold, right? Cheese and mold is something that I do with my kids when we're at dinner time, which we'll start getting back into that normal routine as they go back to school. But what was the good part of the day? What was the bad part of the day, right? Gets me a little bit more insight into what's going on into their life. And then what they want to get accomplished that week. And we'll review what they want to accomplish the week before. So I want to make sure that they're feeling productive, because the last thing you want to do is you want to have an employee that is, it feels like they're on hamster wheel, right? So one of those meetings was with Rowan Goodman. What's up, Rowan? And what she brought to me was that we're very automated in a lot of the systems that we have. And she said that one of our clients is in jail, but we're sending out the trigger, one of the triggers. So that I was like, okay, that's something you bring to the locker room session. So other people may have the same exact concerns, but haven't thought of it to that level. So it creates this higher level of getting everybody on that same page, right? And now then I can go do the work to fix all of that kind of stuff from there, right? Now I want to go to, I'll talk a little bit about the captain's meetings, because none of y'all are in the captain's meetings. And eventually I'm going to remove myself from the captain's meetings. This is the first year I'm in there. And what it is it's an ability for people to create the communication where we can then unify in there from there, right? So, for example, if some of the intakes that we're doing or some of the cases we got wrong data, wrong information that comes out there, they'll bring it to that meeting. We'll have the conversation. Then that captain, who is Rowan, would then bring it to the locker room session. So, hey, guys, listen, you know, the legal team is having issues with the accuracy of some of the data. We need to get our shit together and get that right, right? and then hopefully they fix it, and then we resolve. And again, all of this is all documented and it's outlined and everything there. So that's the captain's meetings. The last part of that is the executive huddles, which Amy and Jen are both part of that. So I want you guys to share with me what your thoughts on the executive huddles are from there. I'll start with you first, Amy.
For me, I was a part of them prior. We've since changed them, and I think it's been really great to have other members of the firm bring issues to the table, and it feels very team-oriented to say, okay, how can we hurry up and solve this? How can we fix this issue? And it's just nice that everybody's on the same track. Everyone's got the same mindset of let's fix the problem and let's move it forward.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's also becomes a distraction too, right? Where, you know, I think that everybody in that room is very focused on solutions and they're also very opinionated, which there's no issues with that, but it creates that level of distraction, right? And I think that the one thing that I've always said about issues is let's prioritize the issues and then you rank them from the biggest issue and on down. And typically what happens if you deal with the biggest issue on top, by default, some of the lower issues fall down from there. Jen, what's your perspective of the executive huddle?
So I like it. She talked about solving the issues, but what I like about it is bringing the new ideas to the table. For instance, in our meeting tomorrow, there's a few things that you and I have talked about that I'm going into pitch.
Wait, we have a meeting tomorrow?
Yes. Oh. 3:00. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So I like that. I like, and then you can get a consensus and move things forward.
That way. Yeah. And again, as something is new, it always needs to have that level of being the ability to grow, to change, to adapt, and having people in that room that is open to it too, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, the way it looks today, if it's the same in a year from now, then we're doing something wrong, right? And, you know, anybody that knows me is that, you know, I'm a firm believer in not being complacent, right? Mm-hmm. I believe that businesses and systems, you need to be first being consistent with it before you can get to a point where you can scale, you can grow, you can develop. And again, when I say consistency, and consistency does not mean 100%, right? 100% is not something that is going to happen in business most of the time, right? But if we can say with 90% certainty, when we do this, this happens. Now we can take that and we can bring in technology. We can utilize AI. We can do those type of things to then scale that to remove it off of a human's plate, right? And use systems and processes to be able to kind of – now they're spending more time with clients. They're spending more time with, you know, coming up with systems to offer better payment plans, the research finance companies and all of that, right? You know, when I talk about the client experience, what I want you guys to now go through – we'll do a quick round robin on this – is – explain to me how, when you're looking at processes and procedures, how you look at the client experience to create something. Let me start with you, Meg, first. You have probably the most difficult job here on this table, right? And I say that from the perspective of when you're calling somebody, it's not to say, hey, I hope you're having a great day. It's to say, hey, your payment's been declined, right? Like that's a crappy role, right? In fact, we might throw in a couple of people each day that you can call and just say, hey, I hope you're having a good day. Like,
just a little change of pace.
Yeah, yeah. Now, talk to me about some of the things that you have kind of figured out or I've helped you with or Amy's helped you out with or somebody's helped you out with to be able to streamline that work because it could be daunting.
Sure. So I would say most importantly, how you interact with these clients that are maybe having a financial struggle at the time is very important. They don't want to be embarrassed about it, which is a big obstacle that we run into. So I oftentimes try to, you know, kind of downplay it and say, hey, like, I can help you. We can change your payment amount. We can change the date, you know, whatever works for you, and kind of bring a level of casualness to it so they don't feel like it's that big of a deal and they don't feel so intimidated by me reaching out to them. So I think that's helpful.
Our motto is if you judge, you cannot serve, right? So for me, who I've done AR, Amy's done AR, we're gonna make Jen do AR. it's this level of frustration, mm-hmm. right? Because I don't give a shit about the money.
Yeah.
As long as we get paid, I don't care.
Right.
Right. It's when people don't communicate. Right. Correct. That's where the frustration part is. And that's when we have to use our emotional intelligence to say, okay, has there been a time in my life where I was late on a bill and what was my response? What was my reaction? Right. And, you know, nowadays it's like, oh shit, I forgot it. Right. You know, but back in the day, it's because I didn't have it. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you owe $300 and you don't have it, having the courage to come up and say, hey, I don't have it. I will have it in 2 weeks is really, 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 really hard. Right. Yep. Yep. And that's why I love Meg's approach to it when she's makes it more casual, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, Meg, maybe I should change this, but Meg isn't paid based on what people are paying or not paying, right?
Please don't.
Yeah. So again, if somebody has things come up in their life, it's okay.
Right.
Right? Like being charged with a DWI, going through the legal process is already overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Having a call about your payment doesn't need to be, right?
Right. Exactly.
So we're going to look at some ways of streamlining that, creating a portal where clients can go in there and feel less intimidated to having to talk to somebody. I know that Amy has done some work because Amy used to do AR before Meg. And Amy's gone out of her way to find out some resources that they can use and provide to them, whether it's calling National Grid, whether all of these different resources, they'd be able to kind of assist with that. So it just shows how client facing that we are. And again, all of this is going behind the scenes. Like if we were to have lawyers follow us on a given day, they would be like, oh, I didn't know you did that. I didn't know you did that. And it's to help their job flow. Now, let's talk on the paralegal side of things. Talk to me about how you guys handle it from a service perspective.
Empathy driven, I think.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about traffic tickets, for instance. I know.
Traffic? But,
I mean, we do those, right? And we think, in our mind, they're just traffic tickets.
Yeah.
Why is this person freaking out?
Yeah.
We have to take a step back and realize this is probably the first time they've ever dealt with a police officer. And they see the news and they're probably thinking, like, all these crazy thoughts and scared out of their mind, thinking, yeah, like, their life is ruined. So the process, like talking about processes, looking at some things to streamline the traffic process, make things more understandable to the client. But that's just a project.
Yeah.
That's on the back burner at the moment. You know, I'm not even Italian.
She's not even Italian, folks.
But it has to be empathy driven. You have to let the client know you understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm a CEO of a law firm. And as soon as those lights come on behind me, I just about poop my pants, right? and I know it's going to be okay, right? And it's this overwhelming that, you know, frankly, when clients are overwhelmed with that stuff, I'm actually okay with it, right? Because it tells me that there's a level of accountability here, right? But again, it's something that we handle every single day. They don't, right? But I will say, if you get a traffic ticket, contact us and trust us. It will be okay. It will be okay. We will figure out the things. We will communicate you. You will do the things. So there's no need to add more stress. And that's what when I used to do the advocate role, I used to tell people, I said, let us take some of the burden off of you now. Let us take some of the burden. Let us take some of that stress. We will communicate. We will tell you what's going on. But you need to make sure that this, whether it's a DWI, a traffic ticket, or, you know, a murder case. No, not a murder case. I take that back. Cut. Whatever that may need to be, let us take some of that burden, because the last thing you want to do is have the stress and anxiety of that situation continue to affect you. Right. You know, you go to a dark place where next thing you know, you're still drinking, and then you get a call from somebody and you got to go pick them up and you get another DWI. Right. It unfortunately it happens. Right. So it's the importance of saying, let's take that burden off of you so that you can continue being a contributing member of society. Now, I'm going to do one more round robin thing. Tell me about a process that you have developed or been part of that has made your job easier. I'm going to go with Amy. I tricked you by pointing in two different directions.
I know. I was like, where are you going with that? I mean, back when I handled AR, you know, I was challenged by you to come up with a better billing process. Our old billing process used to take 3 weeks.
Oh, God.
It involved half of the office. every month for 3 weeks out of that month, I'd want to pull my hair out because it was just super stressful. And you challenged me to make it better. Just kept pushing. Make it better. Make it better. Make it better. We now, between Meg and I, have it down to, I'm not even involved anymore, which is great. Meg's probably spends, 30 minutes over 3 days?
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yep.
And two people in the office are involved.
Yep.
Perfect. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Jen, what about you?
Sure. The independent paralegal monthly case review. So what that is the paralegal does go through their cases on their own, not with their attorney. The reason why that has made things.
Repeat what you just said again. They go through it with who?
Themselves.
Okay.
Independent.
Okay.
The reason why it makes the job easier is it allows you to be proactive
Meg's getting a call from somebody who wants to pay their bill. Can we hold, please?
Probably not.
It allows them to be proactive versus reactive.
Okay.
Emergencies are avoided.
Okay.
Because that's when you're catching if you've missed a court date or something. Just the little, it's a simple, simple process, but it makes a world of difference.
Tell me what the process is.
You pull your cases from Clio.
Okay. Clio is our CRM.
CRM. You can export them in a PDF, and you legitimately go through them one by one.
Okay.
Make sure three things are accurate, any outstanding tasks, your custom fields. Custom fields, for those who don't know, is like next court date, what the stage the case is in, discovery, things like that. Boring stuff.
Boring stuff.
And court dates are on the calendar. The number one thing that a paralegal cannot get wrong. I can't stress that enough. If you're doing that consistently once a month, you're not missing court dates.
Yeah, 100% is that the calendar has to be. It's one of those things where I said earlier that things are not 100%. I take that back because the calendar has to be 100%. Mm-hmm. It's vital for the attorneys.
And then, you know, you're also looking at the cases so you can see if there's anything the attorney has to follow up on so you can bring that to their attention as well.
Yeah, for sure.
It takes a couple hours, but it saves probably double that.
So. Yeah, cool. Mekin. Luton.
Okay. So I would say a process that has been helpful is this is actually, you had a lot of input in this, is kind of changing the format of our billable issues meeting every month, which is a meeting where I go over with the attorneys which of their clients are a problem, essentially, when it comes to how much money has been spent on their case and how much money they have remaining to use. We were doing this meeting in a way that was taking a long time. I was going through every single client. And so Sean had the idea, all right, let's cut this down. It does not need to be this long and in depth. If there's three issues, let's bring up the three issues. And that's it, which I think helps with the attorney's kind of attention span as well, because they tend to get a little, you know, they get bored, I think. But it's I think it's made it much more productive from my standpoint and from their standpoint. So
yeah, productive is an understatement, because you know they go into weeds, right? That's what attorneys are built to do, right?
They're supposed to find.
They're supposed to that, and that's what I tell people all the time, is that, you know, it's their superpowers going to the weeds. Sometimes we don't need to go into the weeds, right? Like, and I get it, right? Like, you know, one of our attorneys, Brady, I can sit there and talk to him, ask him one question, and be there for 30 minutes getting an answer to that question, right? So it's pretty great. So is there anything else that you guys can think of about the power of the administrative side of the business that helps propel the legal side?
Well, I mean, we worry about things so they don't have to, I guess.
Yeah.
We empower, like, for instance, when we are creating our SOPs, you know. Our
Standing operating procedures.
And the books like The Defender or The Weeds, you know, those are.
The Defender and The Weeds. We have, for all of our manuals, we have different kind of fun names for it. So The Weeds is the operation, because you're in the weeds with the operations. And The Defender is the 774 page.
I got it down to 300. Thank you for
300
pages. Much fun. It takes way less time to save now.
Manual on how we do things on the legal side. We got the crew, which is the HR side of things. What else do we have?
Greenback.
We got the perception, which is the HR side of things. We got the
Generator.
Which is the accounting side. And then we have the generator, which is the sales aspect of things. So we've done fun little names and created an avenue where people can go and follow these processes and procedures.
Yeah. So we're basically, I don't remember where I was going with that, but we have those SOPs and those manuals and the processes in and of themselves that the people behind the scenes or the paralegals, legal assistants are doing. So the attorneys don't have to. They have to focus on like five procedures, basically.
We need them in
hundreds.
We need them in one program focusing on their client and how to get their client the best outcome on their case. We don't need them in there going, oh, gee, what should I do in QuickBooks? Nope. Yeah. Don't need you in there. Yeah. Let Meg handle it.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, if you talk to a lot of sole practicing lawyers, their frustration is all of that. It's, you know, all the billables. It's, you know, in fact, if you look at the number one reason for a grievance, it's non-communication, which blows my mind because it's the only thing that you can control. Right. You can't control the result. You can't control, you know, the client's mindset. You can't control, but you can control picking up the phone. Mm-hmm. Right. But what happens is they get stuck. They don't do the billables. They, you know, get frustrated and they get overworked and overwhelmed. And again, for me, it's all about that work-life harmony. And if you have a good work-life harmony, then you're happy coming into work. Then you're going to, by the byproduct of it, is good customer service. Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think that's a really not fair overview of what we do. And I applaud anybody that is watching this to reach out to me if they have any operations questions, issues, processes. I will be more than happy to meet with you. I enjoy that kind of stuff. You may have to buy me a cup of coffee or a vodka tonic, depending on when it is. But I'll be more than happy to do that. This episode is also in memory of Jen's gallbladder, which is going to be taken out on 9/9. So she will be substantially different when she comes back.
One organ
less greasy foods, because we hear that there's problems when you have greasy foods and no gallbladder. But
we could talk about that after.
No. This is the exciting part. This is what's going to get people to watch, Jen.
I have to carry a Code Brown backpack.
That is fantastic. That is going to be a clip. Code Brown.
I need a
backpack.
Send in our group chat.
So, thank you guys. I appreciate everything you do on an everyday basis. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Deuces.